Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to the Oriental Aromatics Limited Q4 and FY22 earnings conference call. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touchtone phone. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Anuj Sonpal from Valorem Advisors. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thank you. Good afternoon, everyone, and a warm welcome to you all. My name is Anuj Sonpal from Valorem Advisors. We represent the investor relations of Oriental Aromatics Limited. On behalf of the company, I would like to thank you all for participating in the company's earnings conference call for the fourth quarter and financial year ended 2022. Before we begin, let me mention a short cautionary statement. Some of the statements made in today's con call may be forward-looking in nature. Such forward-looking statements are subject to risks and uncertainties which could cause actual results to differ from those anticipated. Such statements are based on management's beliefs as well as assumptions made by and information currently available to management. Audiences are cautioned not to place any undue reliance on these forward-looking statements in making any investment decisions. The purpose of today's earnings conference call is purely to educate and bring awareness about the company's fundamental business and financial quarter under review. Let me now introduce you to the management participating with us in today's earnings call and give it over to them for opening remarks. We have with us Mr. Dharmil Bhodani, Chairman and Managing Director, Mr. Shyamal Bhodani, Executive Director, Mr. Prasad Satoshkar, Chief Executive Officer, Mr. Girish Khandelwal, Chief Financial Officer, and Ms. Kiranpreet Gill, Company Secretary. Without any further delay, I request Mr. Dharmil Bhodani to start with his opening remarks. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thank you, Anuj. Good afternoon, everybody. I hope you are all safe and healthy. It is a pleasure to welcome you all to our earnings conference call to discuss the results of the fourth quarter and financial year ending 2022. Talking about the performance during the quarter, we managed to achieve price increases for most of our products in H1 FY22. However, the geopolitical developments in Europe and supply chain challenges resulting from various lockdowns in China. Most raw materials have either seen significant price increases or are showing signs of price increases. Although EBITDA margins improved for the quarter against the previous quarter, this was dampened by further pricing pressure in raw materials, which started in February 2022 for some of our products. Summarizing the operational highlights for the financial year 2022, the company witnessed steady demand across all product categories, aroma chemicals, flavors and fragrances, and camphor. Our production volume increased by 9%, and our sales volumes increased by 12% for the year. We're very happy to report that we crossed the pre-pandemic levels of production volumes as well as sales volumes across all our plants. Our sales realization across product categories, except camphor, improved on a year-on-year basis. As you are aware, during the year, there were substantial increases in prices of all input costs, which impacted the profitability for the year. With regards to the ongoing capital expenditure, during the quarter, the company has successfully commissioned the capacity expansion of its terpenol plant at Bareilly. All other capital investment programs in Baroda, Bareilly, and Mahad are on track. However, they are facing moderate delays due to a combination of factors, which include the residual COVID-19 impact challenges in the global supply chain, steel prices, and the other current geopolitical situations. Now I request Mr. Girish Khandelwal, our CFO, to give you the financial highlights.
Thank you, Dharmil. Good afternoon, all. On a consolidated basis for the fourth quarter of financial year 2022, the operating income for the quarter was rupees 203 crore, which was a decrease of approximately 8% on a year-on-year basis and decrease of 1.4% on a quarter-on-quarter basis. Operating EBITDA reported was rupees 22 crore, which was a decrease of 33.6% on a year-on-year basis and an increase of 36.4% on a quarter-on-quarter basis. Operating EBITDA margins stood at 10.89%, which increased by 302 basis points quarter-on-quarter basis. Net profit after tax reported was about 11 crore, which was a decrease of about 53% on a year-on-year basis and an increase of 31% on a quarter-on-quarter basis. PAT margins reported at 5.17%. On a consolidated basis for the financial year ending 2022, the operating income for the year was rupees 869 crore, which was an increase of approximately 23% on a year-on-year basis. Operating EBITDA reported was rupees 92.5 crore rupees, which was a decrease of about 40%. Operating EBITDA margins stood at 10.65%. Net profit after tax reported was about rupees 53 crore, while PAT margins were 6.13%. Thank you. With this, we can now open the floor for the questions and answer session.
Thank you so much. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on the touchtone telephone. If you wish to withdraw yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles.
Anuj?
Yes, Anuj. We are just waiting.
Yeah, no, I'm just saying try and restrict it to one question per participant, please.
Ladies and gentlemen, we take the first question from the line of Mr. Nirav Jimudia from Envil Research. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good afternoon, team. So I have one question. So if you can break down our CAPEX, what we have been doing, and probably at the end of the CAPEX cycle. So totally, I think we are investing almost around 350 to 400 crores over next one and a half years. So just wanted to understand, and if you can break down the CAPEX in terms of how much we are doing for backward integration, how much it is for the expansion of the existing products, and how much it is for introduction of new products in our product portfolio basket.
Thank you. Parag, you can take this, but I believe this has been answered in the past, so you can go over it briefly.
Sure.
And yes, sir. Parag, sorry to interrupt. Yeah. And if you can just explain in terms of the size of the opportunity for the new products, what we are introducing for our product basket.
Sure. So, Nirav, the CAPEX currently is being done, like you rightly said, in greenfield projects which are happening in Baroda, where we are putting the multi-product hydrogenation facility, where the investment plan is around 150 crores. And these are all new products which have been developed, which are in the generic specialty aroma ingredient space, and which will be manufactured in this particular plant. The other CAPEX or the other expansion that is happening is in the greenfield project at Mahad, where the planned CAPEX is 150 crores, where you will have an element where we will have the development of that particular plot because it's a recently acquired plot. Where we will need to do some expense and get all the infrastructure like electricity, all the utilities in place. And the remaining would be a combination of either a single product plant or multi-product plants, which will be kind of informed to the investor community later.
Okay. And sir, like in terms of the size of the opportunity for the new products, what we are introducing, could you give us some sense like, what could be, because what you have mentioned in our earlier earnings comment is that probably we would like to be second or the third preferred supplier for that particular product, and our market share should be in between those lines, 25 to 30% for that product. So what could be the size of the opportunity eventually for us, what we are targeting?
So we always stick to the plan that, you know, if we are investing X amount of money in a project, the returns or the should be 1.7x. So if you kind of extrapolate that in the opportunity cost, the 300 crores that we are planning to invest between these two facilities, and plus some minor projects in capacity enhancement or utility system upgradation. We are looking at a turnover of around between, GK, correct me if I'm wrong, between 470 to 500 crores coming out of this investment.
So that's about the asset turnover. But what I'm trying to understand is from the opportunity size. So let's say if a product, let's say if we are putting up an X capacity and the size of the opportunity is, let's say, 20X. So I just wanted to understand in terms of the addressable market for the products, what we are putting in our portfolio.
Parag, you can address the available market. I mean, the specific products and numbers would be too long.
Correct.
But
since all these products, Nirav, are multi-product plants, we work on a very simple underlying philosophy that whatever is the available market outside the inventor, we should be in a position to grab anywhere between 30% to 50% of that market within the first 1,000 days of commissioning and validation of the plant. So, that is the kind of opportunity that we are looking at.
Okay.
And this goes across the product mix.
Okay. And, sir, when had we conceived those projects, probably the gross margins would have been better than our existing product portfolio, it's safe to assume. So, in a current situation where most of the raw material prices have gone up substantially, has that gross margins came down as compared to our existing gross margins, or how has been the situation currently?
So, Nirav, to really answer your question, we are looking at the opportunities. All these are generic products which have a life which is left in them of multiple years. So, if we just kind of start looking at the gross margins even before we have put the plant, I think it would probably be unfair. So, we continuously look at whether the opportunity is still there. And that I can confidently say that all the products that we are active and we will get active, there will be substantial opportunities available in those products. And then if we have to be there and we have to be active, we will just have to kind of match the prices and offer better value to the customer.
Got it, sir. Got it. Thank you so much for the answers and all the best.
Thank you.
Thank you, Nirav.
Thank you. We take the next question from the line of Sudarshan N. from Propriety Wealth Management. Please go ahead.
Hello, everyone. This is Sudarshan. So my question will be on the renegotiation power on agreements on contracts. So out of that, so you have mentioned like there will be certain clauses in the agreement where we can pass on the cost increase in the quarters. So my question will be like, if there is a cost increase, can it be passed on entirely or most of it or some of it can be passed on?
So, Sudarshan, thanks for the question. I think in most of the contracts, we have a review clause with our customers. But normally, it has been seen in the past action with the customers where the customers are open to the idea of kind of renegotiating the price and accommodating the price hikes in the future contract rather than really renegotiating the contract in the middle. And having said that, there is also a large chunk of space in our ingredients business where we are supplying in the open market, where although with a little bit of a lag because most of these customers are export customers, we are able to pass on the price increase to them.
Okay. So, sir, so out of this, can we take the contract strike? The clients you have will be negotiating the contracts on the future, not on the existing, right?
On the existing, they take a note. Wherever we are able to pass on, we pass on. But normally it has been the practice that when we renegotiate the contract, which is normally a six-month period, so we are now in our discussions for H2 2022, they would probably accommodate these price hikes and give us a better price for the next 6 months.
Okay, sir. So, and thank you for the answer. The other question is regarding the margins of sectors. So if you take camphor and FNF and aroma, can you say, like, comparing to the previous quarters, not the exact numbers, can you just give an idea, like, which margins have increased and which of the margins have decreased in the sectors?
Dharmil has mentioned in his opening remarks that our sales realization across all categories except camphor has improved, and we continue going in the same path. So wherever we are acquiring new customers in the fragrance and flavor space, we are acquiring them at much better margins. Wherever there is any negotiation that comes, or wherever there are any spots in our ingredients business, we are looking for margins. Camphor is one product where the prices still remain a little soft. But as the festival season will come in, I think we are hopeful that we will be able to kind of see increased demand and some increase in the prices.
Okay, sir. So, and another thing is, what about the margins comparing to international sales and domestic sales? Which side will be higher and lower? Not the exact numbers. Can you, which will be higher compared to international and domestic sales?
So I think very difficult question to really answer to you in a very broad perspective when we have so diverse product. But I think if you look at the margin spread between both the segments, it's more or less the same.
Okay, sir. Thank you. And that's it, sir. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. We take the next question from the line of Vishesha Tulsen from Sicomoro. Please go ahead.
Hello, sir.
Since
Privy is adding capacities in Camphor and Glaxomask, will it affect our market share?
Vishesha, to answer your question, you know, competition comes and competition goes. I think Oriental Aromatics has definitely the strength to really address the competitive landscape, which keeps changing, and we will take all the steps which are necessary to ensure that our market share stays intact and in fact grows even in this new competitive landscape.
Okay, thank you, sir.
Thank you.
A reminder to the participants, anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one at this time. We take the next question from the line of Bob from Falcon. Please go ahead.
Hi. Well, we have been talking about input prices for quite some time, and not only in this industry, in most industries. And everyone is hoping that they revert to normal, but you know, this may not happen because the normal might have just changed, right? So assuming the input prices don't come down at all, how does your business model look like?
So Bob,
to start with, I would completely agree with the gentleman that the normal has changed. So taking it from there, I think you can answer the question.
Correct. So I think, Bob, in a new normal, normally, when you are rewriting the rules of the game, you probably become reactive, then proactive. And that is what we at Oriental are doing. You know, we are looking, we have an internal checkbox where we are saying, are the new products being launched? The answer is yes. Are we having customers for those new products? The answer is yes. Are they paying us in time? The answer is yes. Are we keeping the inventories in control? The answer is yes. So, you know, I think we've gone from a company where we were proactive because we probably knew the old normal to a company where we are looking at every challenge stroke opportunity that comes to us and then react to it in a way which will ensure that we keep adding value to our business. So you know, if you are saying that the input costs might never come back, I think the plants have been designed in such a way where if you do not have the ability of any external advantages coming to your play, I think we will have to go back to the customers and we will have to tell them that this is the new price. And I think in the aroma ingredient space where there is not too much of capacity which is being added globally in a lot of products, you know, because we are not a single product company, we have a wide range of products and a wide range of chemistries in which we operate, which gives us the flexibility to really move from one product to the other. If one product shows a lack of opportunity or lack of acceptance of the new normal. So I think there are a combination of factors which will probably give us the confidence that in any normal, we will be in a position to take corrective action and continue offering value to our customers.
Okay, but this particular quarter is still something of a work in progress because you don't have your 15 to 17% EBITDA margins.
So Bob, I think you probably are a little bit contradicting the first statement, you know, because what happens is if you are in a new normal, you know, you probably might not look at the business from a quarter to quarter perspective, and you probably would go back to that internal checklist that I said, you know, because we are in the business of generic specialty aroma ingredients, which are used as raw materials for functional fragrances, which are used for day-to-day products like soap, detergent, etc., etc., etc. So, you know, when the situation becomes normal, which none of us know, I'm sure the demand for the products are going to come back. You know, this quarter can be, I mean, and I'm not kind of generalizing it, but can be a little special because, you know, I was talking to my friends in America and Europe, and they said, you know, when things started moving in a particular direction globally in the geopolitical space, in fact, you know, they bought a lot of material. So, you know, they are currently overstocked. So I think there are too many factors which are in play right now, and it's something which probably will need more study beyond one quarter to really come to a situation. But during that time when things become normalized, I think our focus in Oriental is to ensure that our relationships with our customers stay solid. We supply them material when they want at a price which is mutually win-win for all of us. So that when the demand eventually comes back, I think those relationships will ensure that we will continue to be the favored supplier to these customers. You know, because in these troubled times, we keep hearing stories about a lot of suppliers who became transactional and who have not kind of taken care of the customer.
Right. No, I agree with you. That's why I'm saying this might be a work in process quarter.
Correct.
As opposed to a typical quarter. But the only concern is ultimately, if you look at the more of an overarching historical perspective, lots of companies go through times where different times, and suddenly their business model doesn't work. I mean, you have seen that. But from what I hear, you're saying your business model is still valid, and you're confidently going ahead with all your capital expenditures, right?
Absolutely.
It's just that you might have to find a new level simply.
Correct.
And we'll have to stay reactive all that time. You know, I mean, just to give you a perspective, that, you know, when the steel prices were really up, you know, we kind of took a pause of 15 to 20 days for all our capex to see if really this was sustainable. And it helped because, you know, they came down and now they are stable at a higher price but lower than what they were in the month of March. So, you know, I think this is just one example. But as a company, we are extremely reactive. All projects are still a complete go, and we're just hoping things come back to normal and we'll be back to regular business.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Bob.
Thank you. We take the next question from the line of Mr. Aman from Astute Investment Management. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, team. My first question is on the volume growth. If you can talk about what was the volume growth in export market versus what was the volume growth in domestic market, as well as what we are targeting for, say, FY23.
Okay. So, Girish, do you have that breakup? Because I don't have the breakup between the volume growth in the export and the volume growth in the local market. But I can broadly say, Aman, that, you know, across all product categories and individual products, we have seen a volume growth. So this 9% is kind of not product-driven or not category-driven, but I think it's been kind of a blanket growth. And it's been across customers in India and it's also been driven by customers outside India, where we've acquired some customers in the fragrance space or in the ingredient space. So I think it's kind of a broad-based volume growth across all product categories.
Right, and our exports and domestic stays the same, actually.
Okay.
Yes. So it's same, almost.
Okay.
Little bit plus minus, but it is similar to the last year. I mean, 30% exports we have.
Okay.
Sorry, what are we targeting for FY23 since some of the CAPEX are coming online?
Correct. So I think the overall impact of the CAPEX would probably be seen more into, either H1 2023 or H2 2023 in terms of hitting the P&L. Till that time, we'll be more into the validation and acceptance phase. So, till that time, we are looking at a growth of anywhere between 10 to 12% in a very conservative way, which will be driven by, the full capacity utilization of the new single product plant, plus certain internal capacity enhancements that we are doing. And that should be the driver for the growth.
Sure, sir. My next question is on our CAPEX plan. So you have quite nicely elaborated the timeline in the previous call. Sir, I just wanted to know any change we have, because there are some delays because of availability of raw material and steel prices, all those things. So any change, if you can talk about project-wise, wherever it is same, you can not talk about it. As well as what kind of capitalization of the CAPEX do we see for FY23?
So to answer your question, I think most of the delays that we are seeing in Baroda as well as in Mahad are not substantial. We probably might have the migration of the project commissioning date by probably one quarter, but it's not moving beyond that. And I think that decision was again a conscious decision to kind of see if we unnecessarily do not, get into contracts at much higher price of steel, when we were advised that the prices of steel are going to come down a little bit and stabilize at a lower price point. So I think we are not foreseeing any substantial delays. We probably might see the migration of the commissioning date from, say, if we have given you a commissioning date of Q3, it might go into Q4. But I don't think it's going to be beyond that as of now.
And the capitalization we are expecting for FY23?
Yeah, Girish, can you answer that question, please?
Yes, around 180-190 crore. Our target is to complete the CAPEX by March 23, so it should get capitalized.
Sure, sir. One clarification, have we gotten the EC approval as of now?
We are in the process of probably getting it, and I think that's something which is which has taken a little longer time than we expected it under any circumstances, but I think we are very, very positive, and we are working with all the stakeholders in the process, and we have provided them information, and we should probably get it shortly in the next coming weeks. But we have not been sitting idle. We have gone ahead and we have completed our basic engineering and detailed engineering for some of the projects and the plot development program for Mahad. So, we have done all our homework. So once we get the EC and we are ready to break ground, I think speed is going to be the key factor there.
Sure. Final question before I come in back in the queue. If you can talk about the product launches planned for FY23 and what was the number for FY22?
So I think we have already stated that we have a very strong product line, a product R&D pipeline, where we target between 4 to 6 products every year. We kind of have achieved that target for 2022. And I think we are on our way to really achieve that target in 2023 as well. And all the products that have been launched in 2022 have been commercial shipments have started to customers globally, and some of them which have been developed for our fragrance division, they have already started using it commercially.
What was the final number for FY22, the total product we had launched?
Six.
Okay, thank you. I'll get back to you.
Thank you. We take the next question from the line of Mr. Saurabh from AMSEC. Before we take the next question, request to the participants to restrict their questions to two per participant. Saurabh, you may go ahead, please.
Yeah, thank you for the opportunity. So just wanted to understand one on the volume growth in Q4, and also are you witnessing any slowdown in offtake for the volume because of the war-like situation or the inflationary environment?
Girish, if you can give the Q4 numbers, I don't have them right now in terms of the volume growth. So Girish probably will inform that. But Saurabh, in terms of the whole newly coined term of demand destruction, I probably will not kind of concur or infer that has been initiated at least in our space. I mean, we are just seeing probably people delaying their purchases a little bit because they have a situation where they overstocked in Q1 of their quarter, which is Q4 of our quarter. So, I'm talking to friends in America and in Russia and in Europe, and all of them are saying that, hey, we have stocks. So, once they get liquidated, I'm sure there will be demand coming back.
Okay. So my next question is on the price. Like you mentioned that maybe half yearly you will be able to renegotiate a contract. So is it possible to take pass on the entire cost? And also the how is the situation on the logistics side? So are you still facing an issue in terms of logistic and also the cost wise? How should we look at?
So I'll first answer the logistics question and then I'll probably go to the first part. On the logistics side, on the RM procurement strategy, most of our contracts are SIF. So, we are relatively insulated because I think all the risk then gets added on to my supplier side. On the sales side, wherever we have SIF contracts, we have seen that, the SIF contracts again are divided into two elements where, we are talking to, where we are looking at the spot sales. There, I think the increase in the freight cost has already been recovered. Where we have gotten into the RFQ prices and we are seeing not significant, but some increases in freight in some geographies, I think that is something which probably stays unrecovered and which we will factor into our H2 RFQs when we go and talk to the customers.
Just to understand from your customer's perspective, so are they also into the long-term contract with their customers? Or they are into the short-term context and any increase in the cost, those your customer will be able to take on that price hike as well?
I don't think, Parag, we have privy to this information.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
Okay, thank you. Thank you and all the best.
Thank you so much. We take the next question from the line of Rita Mukherjee from SR Investments. Please go ahead.
Hello, am I audible?
Yes, you are.
Thanks for giving this opportunity. I just wanted to ask, the flavor and fragrance plant is not working at full capacity utilization. When can we expect the utilizations to increase?
So, I mean, it's not really a true statement that it's not working at full capacity. We run the plant one shift to full capacity, and right now this plant has the capability to run three shifts. And, you know, at the single shift, so far we are able to manage the volumes we are moving. And also in the fragrance business and the flavor business, it's about compounding. It's not about reactions. It's not about... It's about a simple blending business. So, you know, the capacity utilization in the fragrance and flavor plants is not necessarily calculated with the same methodology that we would use in the chemical plants. So right now, I think the plant is running for what it was designed. And if need be, we can, in the same plant without additional capex, increase the capacity when required.
All right.
And also, it's multiple batches. So, you know, you're producing from 5 kilos to 20 tons a batch. So when you talk about capacity, it really doesn't add up because you have to, you know, then figure out which vessel, which batches, how many batches a year. So it's a very complex calculation, and it's not necessarily looked at the way it's put by you in the question in the fragrance and flavor side, at least to the best of my understanding.
All right. Thank you. Just to add in the follow-up question, how are we tackling the increase in raw material price problem? Are we storing high inventory now?
Good. Parag?
So, you know, we have taken a conscious decision, Mr. Mukherjee, of not really going into high inventories, you know, because the problem right now is not only about price increases. You know, we have seen situations where we have used this model 6 months back or in Q3 when, you know, you suddenly had the China electricity situation and, you know, some raw materials suddenly went short and we gone and we kind of overstocked. And then the prices corrected within no time. So, you know, in the new world order as we speak, I think we are more in the reactive mode. We are more in the listening mode. Wherever we see an opportunity that a material is available at the right cost, we buy. Where we need to buy the raw material to ensure business continuity for our customers, we buy it at the market price. And so I think it's a combination of a lot of factors, which is depending on the inventory. And so if you look at our inventory numbers at the end of the year, in fact, they are down by 15% in terms of quantity, although they are up in term by close to 55 crores in terms of value, you know, because of the increase in the raw material price.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Thank you. We take the next question from the line of Mr. Ankur Periwal from Axis Capital. Please go ahead. A reminder to the participants, request you to kindly restrict your questions for two per participant. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity, sir. Okay, so first question on the revenue breakup. So, you know, if you can help us understand how does it get broken up into spot as well as contractual across the domestic and export. And, you know, extension to that question will be that how do we decide on our pricing? Is it, you know, on a cost plus basis or a percentage margin basis?
So,
if I can just answer this on the flavor fragrance vertical. On the fragrance flavor vertical, we look at giving fixed pricing to our customers for at least 6 month periods, and then we review it with them. And accordingly, in the fragrance side, we do cover raw materials, which are critical for that entire period, and the commodities we also contract out. So on the fragrance and flavor side, we have stability in pricing, and also in terms of the costs, I mean, looking at the current situation, unfortunately, even if we're going into long-term contracts, there is a pricing issue, which is an unusual scenario. But if this is going to be the new normal, then going forward, we will also correct our prices accordingly.
Yeah.
So, perhaps that's on the flavor fragrance. On the chemicals, I'll leave it to you.
So Ankur, to answer your question, at a group level, you know, we if you look look at the business has close to 30% of our sales, which are in the contract space, and the remaining 70% plus minus some percentage points every year is in the open to sale sale. Having said that, in this 70%, you know, also includes our fragrance and flavor sales, where we do not have a kind of a written contract with the customer, but it is assumed that a price once given is not going to be changing for the next 6 to 9 months. So broadly, this is the breakup, and in terms of how our contract versus free to operate sales are. And what was your second question, Ankur?
Sure. Sorry. Just an extension or a clarification here. So when you say, 6 to 9 months pricing, and wherein our finished goods as well as our raw material is more or less contractual on a similar time frame, this part of the business, the F&F business, will not be susceptible to the RM volatility. Will that be right?
You can't probably kind of summarize it across the board. Like Dharmil said, most of the critical raw materials, he would have a stock position which is equivalent to what he's offering as a price stability to the customer. But, you know, there are 2,000 line items in the fragrance and flavor division purchasing list. So, you know, it's impossible for you to really have a 9-month inventory for all of them. So, you know, it's kind of, yes, broadly speaking, it should be kind of insulating in terms of its margin development capabilities. But, you know, in the current situation where everything is going up, you know, you have a little bit of an unusual situation.
Sure, that's helpful. And, you know, the other question which I had was on the pricing of the products. So when you price, it is largely on a cost plus basis, or, we typically on a percentage margin here. And the RM inflation that we are talking of, whether this pass-through will be an absolute pass-through, or you will take a 20% or a 30% pricing depending upon the RM inflation?
So I think it's an extremely broad question. I think we do a bit of everything that you just said. Since we are a multi-product company on the ingredient side and a multi-product company on the fragrance side, you know, I think our pricing decisions are based on all the models that you just mentioned. And I think the dream is always, and the objective is always, to achieve ultimate pass-through. We're not successful every time, but I think because we have created a reputation of being a very responsible supplier who has kind of stood with the customer during the good times and the bad times, one thing is for sure, that we always get an extremely fair and a patient hearing from our customer, all of them, across the board.
Okay, fair enough. And last question.
Sorry to interrupt. This is the operator here. The participants are requested to restrict their questions to 2 per participant. We take the next question from the line of Neha Idnani from Minerva Investment. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon. My questions have been answered. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. We take the next question from the line of Rahul Jain from Credence Wealth. Please go ahead.
Thanks for the opportunity. So, question number one, Parag.
I don't think we can hear him.
Yeah.
Voice is not.
Miss Neha?
No, I think we are talking to Rahul, operator.
Yes, yes. Rahul, he got disconnected. We take the next question from the line of Saket Saurabh, an individual investor. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks for the opportunity. So I had two questions. So one, if I compare to, say, versus Q3, in Q3 we had a partial plant closure, and there was a debottlenecking capacity also that came up, and then we took price hike as well. Then still, why do we have Q3 and Q4 flat in terms of sales? So that's one question. And second is, you know, our operating cash flow has again become negative, even though at what we was just told that inventory levels have come down. So what explains that? and how do we intend to improve that? Because even in the last calls we discussed, that is one area that where, you know, because I've been investing in this company for close to 7-8 years now. So that is one area where I still see that soon, every now and then, that cash flow becomes negative. So yeah, these are my two questions.
So, I mean, from a non-finance perspective, I can answer, and Girish, you correct me if I'm going wrong, which is, Saket, you know, although our inventory quantities have gone up, but I said in terms of the value of the inventory, the value of the inventory has gone up by 55 crores. So, you know, I think the negative cash flows are a net outcome of using working capital for kind of ensuring that we have the inventories and we are ensuring business continuity to our customers. And the other aspect of the use of the cash flow is for our CapEx expansion, which is where the capital. So, Girish, am I correct in terms of summarizing?
Yes, yes. All right, absolutely right.
So if these two elements were not there, we probably would have ended up with a positive cash flow. But I think if for a company which is continuously growing in the number of products and the customer acquisition, I think it's probably a healthy sign.
See, free cash flow being negative is fine because then CapEx come in. But I think when our operating cash flow went down, was negative. So that is why I think this question came up, that even day-to-day operations are sucking a bit more cash than what we would have expected.
Okay. Girish, you want to answer this?
Yes, yes, yes. Actually, see, because of the price increase, you can see the increase in the inventory's value as well as the means increase in the receivables. But if you see the means my debtors' day and the inventory day, this has come down. Debtor days has come down from 88 to 81 days, and inventory days has come down from 129 to 121 days. So there is an improvement, but in terms of the value, yes, our working capital is blocking there.
And the question regarding, you know, Q3 versus Q4 sales being flat despite, you know, some of the issues that we had last quarter. Yeah, yeah.
Actually, the sales volumes are a little bit positive, but if we see the means, the manufacturing expenses, input costs like coal prices, gas prices, all...
But I'm talking about sales only, revenue only. I think this wouldn't impact revenue. I'm not talking about the bottom line. That I'm fine. We have explained. But the quarter-to-quarter sales are also flat. Even though our last quarter we had a slight plant closure, then our debottleneck capacity also came up.
But
then we also took price hikes, right?
But that doesn't this have to do with the camphor pricing, which I've said in my opening statement?
I think Dharmil, you are correct. Saket, in terms of the sales looking a little flat, first is the debottlenecking that came in Q3. You know, all the sales realization has not happened. You know, we are in the process of developing customers for this new capacity. So that's going to take time, point number one. Point number two, I think Dharmil has made it very clear in his opening remarks that we still see a situation where there is a softening of the pricing in terms of the camphor. So, you know, I think these two factors put together is a combination where you know, although the volumes have kind of stayed or grown a little bit, but the sales look a little flat.
And what is the current on camphor? Is it improving or is it further going down? Because I think it's 1/3 of revenue, right? That camphor accounts for our 1/3 revenue, right? And also, what was the erosion, if you can help me with these two?
So, Saket, it's not just camphor which is 1/3. I think along with camphor, there is a huge basket of other terpene chemicals which add up to 1/3, and where we are seeing relative growth in terms of our ability to pass on the price hikes. In terms of camphor, I think normally Q4 is an off-season. So, you know, the camphor sales are a little subdued. Hopefully going forward, once the festival season comes in, we should be in a position to probably see better realization.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. We take the next question from the line of Mr. Rahul Jain from Credence Wealth. Please go ahead.
Am I audible?
Yes, you are.
Yes, Rahul.
Thanks for the opportunity. And what we have seen is decent improvement on the margin side for this quarter, but somehow the top line has been flat, as explained in the previous answer. So just to carry further from there, in the previous call, we had mentioned that, you know, we are running at almost 230 crores of quarterly run rate of top line, plus 40 crores coming in from the additional new specialty chemical. And thereby, Parag, we had guided that for FY23, somewhere around 1100 crores top line is doable. Given the current scenario, do we stick to that kind of, is that doable or not?
Parag? Do we have Parag?
I think he got disconnected.
He's connected to the call.
Yeah, can you guys hear me?
Yes.
Yes, now Parag.
Now we can hear you. Yeah.
Did you hear the question, Parag?
Yes, I did. I did.
Right.
So Rahul, I think you are referring to the numbers that were given in the last investor call. And,
yes.
You know, that number is kind of a summarization of, you know, a lot of these projects having some sense of sales contributing to that top line. And, you know, like I said, that we find ourselves in a very tricky situation where there are too many unknowns in the field. And so when you actually are navigating a field which you are exploring, although we are confident and we are endeavor to reach that number, but we feel that a 10 to 12% growth is something which is definitely doable. And we will try to kind of reach that number of 1100.
Sure. Thank you so much.
Thank you. We take the next question from the line of Mr. Sudarshan N. from Property Wealth Management. Please go ahead, sir.
Hi. Thank you for your opportunity. So my question is regarding margin guidelines. So previously, the margin guidelines were 35% for gross margin and between 15 and 17% for EBITDA margin. So I can see from this FY22 financials, the gross margin, we have achieved the target of 35%, but EBITDA is at 10.5, we can say 11. So my question is, the dent in EBITDA, like the guidelines was at 17 and 15 and the achieved EBITDA is 10. Can we say this is mainly because of increase in operating expenses rather than input raw material cost and something, or can you shed some light on this?
So, Kirish, correct me if I'm wrong, because even our gross margins, I mean, because we have, you know, we have had an increase in our material consumption as well, signifying that there has been an increase in the raw material costs as well. So, you know, I think the reduction in EBITDA margins is primarily driven by, in the past year, is primarily driven by an increase across all input costs, which also includes raw materials. So, which also include the raw material costs. So I think as we move on and hopefully the situation stabilizes with our relationships with all our customers intact, we should slowly be in a position to kind of get back to our margin expectation of between 15 to 17% across all the segments that we operate in.
Okay, sir. And do we still stick to this gross margins at 35 or any revised guidelines?
Kirish, you want to answer this question?
Yes, in the Q4 we achieved 36%, but we have to look in the current scenarios of the raw material price fluctuation. So
to answer your question, our endeavor is to, you know, get to what we have given as guidance, and I think in a quarter or two we will, you know, relook at that. But right now we stay committed to, you know, trying to achieve those numbers which we have given as guidance.
Okay, sir. Thank you.
Thank you. This was the last question. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Dhimal Bhutani from Oriental Aromatics Limited for closing comments.
Thank you so much. Thank you all for participating in this earnings call.
I hope we have been able to answer your questions satisfactorily. If you have any further questions or would like to know more about the company, we would be happy to be of assistance. We are very thankful to all our investors who have continued to stand by us and also have confidence in the company's growth plan and focus. And with this, I wish everyone a great evening. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. On behalf of Oriental Aromatics Limited, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines.